Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Fridays mean we take your calls, 312-644-6767. Hub is here. He is thrilled to be with his people. Hub, how you doing this morning?
I am thrilled to be with my people and thrilled to be with you guys. How you doing?
Very good.
Hub, I am sorry to say I cannot be with you today because I am here, so you're going to have to hold it down for me.
Well, what everybody at House Hall realizes, that means I need to make the coffee because Mark and I are the only ones who come in and make the coffee.
That's very true. No, that's true. That's true. There's a lot of people up there who depend on me. And Hub for a while wasn't making coffee because he thought the coffee machine was broken. Oh. But that was simply not the case. Hub, let's get right into it. Before we get to your people, and we will not keep them waiting long, your thoughts right away on the Myles Garrett hitting with the helmet of the Pittsburgh quarterback Mason Rudolph.
You know, I don't know what to make of it, guys. And we have precedent here because we go all the way back to the summer in OTAs when there was an incident at practice where Kyle Long ripped the helmet off. Was it Rashad Coward? I'm trying to remember now.
It was Jalen Dalton.
And then swung the helmet, hit him on the shoulder pad, and everybody kind of freaked out. And, you know, we talked about, you know, never really seen that before, you know, and to see it happen and unfold the way it did last night, you know, there's a ton of emotion involved. I understand that. I think all the idiots on Twitter trying to lay some blame on Mason Rudolph, that's just insanity. Because, I mean, what I didn't understand is it was a clean sack. He's down. Mm-hmm. Why does Garrett come up trying to rip the helmet off? What's going on there? I mean, what could Rudolph have said? I can't imagine he probably said much of anything. He was busy getting clobbered. So I don't want to overreact. You know, I don't want to throw the guy in jail. Thank God nobody was seriously hurt. But I don't see how you let him play again this season. I mean, minimally, I think you got to suspend him for the rest of the year. And that is a hefty fine because this is a young man who, you know, loses those game checks. And I don't know, maybe you got to do more than that. But not, it stays on the football field. All this stuff about prosecution, everything, that I do not agree with.
Yeah, I doubt that's happening. Hub, let's get you to your people. In Fort Wayne, it is Trent. Trent, you got Hub.
Hub, maybe my logic's faulty, but contrary to what fans think, I'm pretty sure every, even the worst NFL coach has forgotten more about every possible formation, offensive or defensive, than we'll ever know. And while you always say play calling's an art, not a science, you don't want to question it at that level. In a macro way, I think educated football fans can raise questions about if players are being used in the right ways. So with the NFL being one of the last true meritocracies where wins matter more than anything, why do you think we still see so many coaches try to put square pegs into round holes to fit what is their, and I'm air quoting, their system?
Well, I think there's two possibilities, but let me backtrack for a minute. When I kind of get pissy about, you know, debating play calling, certainly as knowledgeable fans, we can debate, is it a run or pass situation? Is it obvious that formation's not working? Are you running into the teeth of the defense? We can see all those things. I don't mean to insult fans. But what I'm saying is that when it comes to the choice of the actual play, you know, which we don't even know the terminology or the names of them, and we don't know what routes are associated with it, we don't know who executed them properly, that's where I will stop and say, I'm not going to go after a coach for calling that play in that spot. You know, every once in a while you come up with the trick play. I thought the double reverse last week was silly. You know, it hadn't been set up in any way. Or was that 2 weeks ago? Now, I can't remember if that was Philly or Detroit. So that's the kind of stuff that gets me when we start talking about, like, we know how to call plays. You know, that said, there's only two answers to your question. One is that the coach thinks that he is seeing something that the rest of us aren't, and it happens all the time. You know, they work with these guys all week long. They see them do things in practice. They think they're capable of doing things that we as fans and media have not yet seen on the field game day, because that's really the only time once the season watches, even with media, that we get to see anything. And the other is that he's just being stubborn and that he's willing to sacrifice a player for the good of the installation of his system because he believes at the end of the day that he and therefore the organization will only ultimately reach its greatest success when the system is fully installed and working the way he believes it can.
He is Hub Arkish, the host of the Ameristar pregame show here on 670 The Score. That is from 4 o'clock to 7:20 tomorrow night. He's got the post game for 2 hours after
Sunday
that.
Night.
Sunday night. Yeah, I apologize. I'm already in Saturday already because I just want this Bears Dunkin' Friday to roll through because I love it so much. At two, let's see, Wrigleyville, and it is Kyle. What's up, Kyle?
Hey, Kyle.
Hey, guys. Hey, Hub. Question last night regarding the Garrett situation. Obviously, the quarterback there at Pittsburgh, Mason Rudolph, is not a super prominent player thrown in the limelight this year due to injury. And I'm just wondering, as far as punishment goes, if you think and how drastically different you think punishment would be if, you know, for example, it was still Ben Roethlisberger that this had happened to, or if it was a different team and a, you know, prominent player like Tom Brady had been the one to experience that last night.
It's a good question, and I understand it. I'd like to believe it wouldn't matter. I think this is about the violence of the moment, the message it sends about the game to the casual observer, and the fact that the helmet became a weapon. I don't think it really matters who the victim was in this particular case. And Mason Rudolph isn't just some guy. He is the quarterback of the future there. You know, they believe that he's the heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger. But your point is very well taken. You know, for all of the varying opinions and some hyperbole that we've heard, you know, since, imagine if it was Brady or Brees. You know, it probably would be that much louder, but I don't think it would be any different. And I'd like to believe that Goodell's not going to view it any differently.
It is now and officially a Friday with Hub Arkish because we head to Lakeview, and it's Frank.
Yes. Yeah, hey, Frank, or Hub?
Yeah, Frank.
I get off speaker, sorry. if you realizing that nobody's seen Kaepernick play in the last 3 years, still, two-part question. Answer the first part first in case you don't get to the second part. Do you think Kaepernick could possibly be a better backup, a backup to Trubisky than Daniel? Even though Daniel's got all the you know, experience and knows the system so well, and how many other teams do you think he would be possibly be a better number two quarterback?
Thank you,
you know, Frank.
Actually,
pretty good questions, because really, I have kind of half seriously and half kidded over the last year and a half that I think Chase Daniel is here more as life coach for Mitch Trubisky than backup quarterback. I mean, you know, this is a guy 11 years in the league, now has 6 starts. He is obviously not somebody that several teams have wanted out there on the field unless it was an emergency. But he was brought here because he knows the system so well, because he's such a good guy in the locker room, because he's so comfortable in the number two role and teaching and developing a young quarterback. So all that is part of it. I don't know that Colin Kaepernick fits any of those modes. He clearly doesn't know the system yet. He hasn't seen it. All the reports out of San Francisco were always that he was a good teammate, but that doesn't make him a congenial competitor, if you will. So I don't know. You know, I think that's one of the reasons. Well, I shouldn't say one of the reasons, because I think this whole thing is kind of a clown show. But assuming the intentions were good in the first place, it's one of the reasons they made a point that there will be both on-field workout and interviews. You know, teams want to get to know this guy. Now, I have interviewed him one-on-one a few times and done a number of his games. And you know, when you say, Frank, how many other teams, there are at least a dozen teams in the NFL right now where he's better than the starter before we get to the backups. In terms of a football player, a guy you could put out there if you had to and you lost your quarterback for the season to have him start 10, 12 games, he'd be the best backup in the league. I just don't know. You know, because as a backup, we'd never heard of him until Harbaugh decided to throw him out there. We didn't know what it was like with him behind Alex Smith, and he claimed the job pretty quickly once he got on the football field. So you would have to talk to him and get a feel for, you know, whether you could trust him to be a good teammate and a good contributor in that role.
Hub, you know, I guess if it is going to be a clown show, it's good that they have Hugh Jackson running it. He has experience running clown shows.
I was, you know, when I heard that they were going to get Joe Philbin out, I thought that made sense. And then after I heard Philbin, suddenly it was Hugh Jackson running it. Although, in fairness, that's too easy.
Of course.
Yeah, Jackson, he was a reputable offensive coordinator for a number of years before he was a complete failure as a head coach.
Let's take a call from Frank.
Let's take another call from Frank. It's in Oak Park, and we are with Frank again.
I have what-if questions about the Bear quarterback situation and about Lovie Smith. First, with the Bears, assume the team brings in an experienced signal caller for 2020 to compete with Mitch. also assume this is not a player with experience in similar systems run by the Chiefs or Eagles. Do you think Nagy would remain stubborn in how he prepares the team and chooses a starter without having either competitor face live reps against an NFL defense in the preseason? As for Lovie Smith, he has engineered a mini-resurrection of Illinois football. Despite a number of handicaps faced by the program, the team is now bowl-eligible. After all, how many major colleges must transport recruits to campus visits through a cloud of powerful manure odor like those coming to Champaign? Mm. If Smith can continue the Illinois revival for a few more years, will a league that is reemphasizing the run and defense again consider Lovie for a head coaching position? Or will an NFL that is more than a tad ageist in selecting its top field generals be reticent to present as its next standard bearer a man who looks curiously like Grady from Sanford and Son?
Big dummy. I thought I flushed the toilet.
Rick, that was a long,
it's a novel today.
It was a long road to Grady, wasn't it, guys?
It really was.
That's where we were trying to get on that one. I'll tell you, I really enjoyed visiting with Lovie a couple weeks ago. I hadn't talked to him in a long time. And we had an interesting relationship over there. It's never a bad relationship, but, Lovie struck me as someone who has evolved in our conversation with Olin and Patrick and I a couple weeks ago. And I think is finally maybe getting comfortable as a head college coach and at Illinois. I would be a little careful with the revival stuff. They've got a signature win over Wisconsin, almost came back and beat Michigan. But other than that, they're winning games that they should win. So let's see what this recruiting group looks like. Let's see if they can sustain this. And I hope they do, because it was interesting talking to Lovie. He did sound like a little bit of a changed guy, not that he needed to change. I'm just saying the difference between pro and college. And my guess is if he is now eventually successful at it, there's no reason to go back to the NFL. He was the third most successful head coach in history of the Heritage franchise in the National Football League, flamed out kind of dramatically in Tampa. Always struggled as a head coach because, and it's ironic, he was very much to defense what Matt Nagy is to offense. He just never found the right offensive coordinators, or at least not guys who got it done, as opposed to, Nagy's had great luck so far with Fangio and Pagano. But I don't see the rush to get Lovie. I don't see the demand to get Lovie back in the NFL. I think this is his future. And again, it was fun visiting with him a couple of weeks ago. He's invested, and I think it would be great for local football and great for the university and great for the state if he could get them back to where they were actually competitive on a regular basis.
That was a stellar interview you guys did with him on the Ameristar pregame show. You and Olin and Pat, that was just, I listened to the whole thing, Hub, and it was just really cool to hear all three of you from your different perspectives reconnect with a guy who's got that team to where he wanted it to be. It was a really cool interview.
Well, Connor, thank you. And what's funny about it is that the three of us, none of us were sure how it was going to go when we decided to do it. Because, Lovie's an interesting guy, but it was fun to do. I know that, and I really enjoyed visiting with him.
You've got more with Hub when we come back. 312-644-6767. Lines are open. You could get on pretty quickly. Lose weight eating the food you love. Now save $50 plus. Get a week of protein packed shakes free at Nutrisystem.com/radio. Restrictions apply. Call or see website for details. More Hub. We come back. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show, 670 The Score. We're on until noon. Hub is with you for another couple of minutes or so. 312-644-6767. That is the phone number you can call to get your question in to the Ameristar pregame host, Hub Arkish. He is going to be on from 4 until 7:20 Sunday evening, leading right up to game time. He's got the postgame for 2 hours after that. Hub's got the phone calls ready to roll. We head out to Rockford, and it is Mike. Mike, what's your question for Hub? Mike!
Sounded great, Mike.
Mike! What's up, man?
Yo.
I think Mike lost his phone somewhere. Bruh. I'm worried for Mike. All right, moving down the line. Melrose Park, it's Vince. What's up, Vince?
Hello, boys. So my question is in regards to the Bears. How much, if at all, are the Bears' ownership involved in the whole quarterback situation. I know that they have pretty much empowered the GM and the coach to make all these decisions, but the ownership has actually been through this before with Jay Cutler and even going further than that with Rex Grossman and Kyle Orton. So I'm just wondering, are they getting involved in this at all in terms of who they bring in, who they like, or is it just strictly, you know, they give it to the GM and to Matt Nagy to figure it out, and then they'll, I guess, give them a review at the end of the season? Like, what exactly is their role in all this?
Hello?
Yeah, we got you.
Yes. Yeah. There's actually two different answers to that, because relative to Mitch Trubisky, Chase Daniel, Tyler Bray, any quarterback who's played the last 5 years, and I'm just dealing with the Ryan Pace regime, the McCaskies have nothing to do with it whatsoever. They tell their football people to run the football business, and that's the way it should be, and I'm sure the same for Ted Phillips. Now, I'm not saying that passing in the hall, that George or Ted might not ask Matt or Mark Helfrich or Dave Ragone a question, but the quarterback, the 53-man roster, it's completely up to Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. Now, the exception, if you're now asking about this Colin Kaepernick stuff, is that I'm sure that any of the 32 NFL teams would have to have a conversation with ownership to make sure that ownership was comfortable in either not participating or participating because of all of the conversation around this particular young man. Whether it has even gotten to that level or not, I don't know. But you would want to at least ask the boss, you know, are you cool with this if we're going
to
do it?
Does that apply to the workout in your mind, or just the signing of the final, here it
no.
is, Colin, sign the contract?
No, I mean, it's almost premature before you go to the workout. It may involve the workout, but I would think, more to the point, you know, you can go scout anybody you want. If coming out of that workout you were thinking maybe this is something we should do, I think that's where you, and I don't even know that it's a permission so much as communication and making sure that everybody's on the same page.
Segment with Hub is brought to you by your Chicagoland Papa John's. Papa John's is giving you a free pizza this weekend. Buy one pizza at regular price. Get a second pizza of equal or lesser value for free. Use promo code FREEPIZZADAY on the Papa John's app or online at papajohns.com. That's promo code free pizza day. 312-644-6767. Line or two open. You want to get on with Hub, you can do so. That's the number to call. We head out to the north side, and it is Jesse for Hub.
Hey, guys. Hey, Hub. For me, my question about Coach Nagy, the way he has dealt with Mitch Trubisky is so awkward to me, and it's been that way for a long time. You know, I went to Catholic school. Sometimes you have to be shamed into doing better. And when I hear this last press conference, okay, this was just the pinnacle of it. When you hear him, oh, my little Mitchie, if I had 11 little Mitchies, we would be doing so great. The way he just performs, I just want to love this man so much. You know, sometimes you just have to just call a spade and not say touchdown, 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 when really that's not the way that the man performs. And when he does not do what he's supposed to do, why don't you just burn him on it a little bit?
Thanks, Jesse.
Well, Jesse, the dramatization of the last press conference is a bit overstated. Mark and I were in the front row. I didn't hear any of that, you know. So that's
my little Michi. You didn't hear that?
Yeah. My little Michi. No, I think obviously Jesse was, you know, being dramatic for effect.
I hope so.
I mean, I don't agree. Well, let me take a step back here. I was a little taken aback that Matt was as impressed with Mitch's performance last Sunday as he was, so much so that I went back and turned on the tape for a third time, and I saw some of the things that he was talking about. But he did not present it in such a way that he was trying to blow smoke up the kid's butt and make him feel better about himself. That was his analysis of that particular game tape, and Trubisky did play better. Now, where it bothered me was it was also the offense's second worst output of the season. The offensive line, after the switch of Whitehair and Daniels, was awful. You know, and I'm not saying it was because of the switch or because of those two. So there was a lot that was off-putting in the way that Matt analyzed that game. But I didn't feel like it was, you know, protecting or overhyping Mitch at all. That said, I've been talking about this with you guys all season long, is that I do think that I don't know that it's being coddled or being the teacher's pet or being the favorite so much. is I just think they're trying to protect him too much. And I think at some point you stop with all this silliness and you say, go out there, you know, stop thinking and start playing, and we'll live with some of the mistakes and let's see what happens. Because that's what Deshaun Watson is doing. That's what Lamar Jackson is doing. That's what Patrick Mahomes is doing. That is clearly not what Mitch Trubisky is doing. And so I do have some issues with the way that he's being tutored. But I don't know that he's being pampered. That I don't necessarily agree with.
Bobby is in the loop. He's on the Bernstein and McKnight show, and he's got Hub.
Hey, Hub. Thanks very much for taking my call. I have a question regarding the Bears defense, specifically Roquan Smith and Eddie Jackson, two young players I know that, you know, the Bears are trying to build around. And, you know, unfortunately, we haven't seen the same number of impact plays from them this year as we did last year. I was wondering if you think that's a result of maybe some nuances in Pagano's scheme that they're just not used to yet, whether they've been given new assignments and responsibilities that they have to get used to, or do you think maybe it's more of a development issue? You know, just know that we need these guys to be performing and hope that they can step it up. Thanks very much.
Yeah, I think there are two very different cases. And Mark, I'm curious if you saw this, because I was talking with Arthur about this yesterday in our podcast. Arthur Arkish, he's my son. He's our managing editor, occasional contributor here at The Score. And he had said to me, you know, were you as impressed with Jackson Sunday against the Lions as I was? And I said, you know, I noticed him a couple times. So again, I went back and watched a little bit. He probably played his best game Sunday, and he was close a couple times. He did appear to be more aggressive. But that said, it has been a disappointing season, and I think you've got to separate the two young men you asked about. Roquan Smith started the season like a house on fire, and then he had the week where a couple hours before the game, we find out there's a personal issue, and he has not been the same since. And so how much of his, you know, fall off in production and at times aggression on the field might have to do with whatever this personal issue is, I just don't know, because I don't know what the issue is, nor should I necessarily. I'm not pushing, you know, personal is personal, but as an analyst, this is all I can tell you, is that he has not been the same player since. In the case of Eddie Jackson, I think the biggest problem is that they just haven't had the pressure in front of them that they had last season. And this is a bit of a mystery to me, because, yes, Akeem Hicks is a huge loss. And the fact that Roquan Smith isn't producing as well at the second level affects the defensive backs behind him, too. But nonetheless, you go look at the Vikings game, and there's no Akeem Hicks, and it was their best, you know, pressure game of the season. And so it's been kind of a group lack of production where they don't have that spark, you know, and they had it earlier in the year and it disappeared in London and they haven't found it since. And I think in the case of Eddie Jackson, it's probably a little bit of a hangover from that first team All-Pro season, and the fact that there's not as much havoc in front of him that makes it more difficult for him to make those big plays.
Yeah, you know, on Roquan, I think symbolic of his somewhat down season relative to last year is that you see him coming off the field on third downs a lot of times, and you see guys like I know Nick Kwiatkowski had a great game last week, but they're putting him out there instead of Roquan. I saw Kevin Pierre-Lewis out there at times instead of Roquan. I saw Joel Igbuneye out there on the field last week. So those are some very curious things happening. And then as far as Eddie Jackson is concerned, yeah, I like the hangover angle, and I think that we became conditioned to base Eddie Jackson's play on his ability to intercept the ball. And I get it that largely is a big part of any cornerback or DB's existence, is making turnovers. But that hasn't happened this year. Those opportunities have not been there for Eddie Jackson for whatever reason. I think overall he has played well, maybe not at an all-pro level, though.
Hub, now's about the time in the show and in the week when we ask you how you feel about Bears and Rams coming up on Sunday night.
You know, it's funny, guys. I haven't seen anything from the Bears that allows me to pick the upset here. You know, clearly the Rams are the favorite at 5-4. They're a game better than the Bears. Their playoff hopes are more realistic. They're at home. They've got their own issues. All of that is wonderful. I think the Rams may be even a little more messed up than the Bears right now. And so I have to pick the Rams. It would be, you know, going against what my eyes are telling me not to. And so I picked them 26-19. But as the week has built, I've had this growing feeling in my gut that if there's an upset this weekend, I'm looking at all these games. It's hard to find an upset. I wouldn't be shocked if the Bears go out there and give him a pretty good game, because and maybe even, you know, if something clicks for Mitch, maybe they steal one here. Because I'm telling you, you dig into the Rams a little bit, you're going to find a team with bigger issues than the Bears have right now.
There are some problems, Hub. I feel a lot. I'm with you, which scares me more than anything else. But it's probably a good place to be. A great place to be is listening to the Ameristar pregame show, 4 to 7:20 Sunday night, leading you right up to the Bears game with Hub Arkish, Olin Krutz, and Pat Manley. Thanks, Hub. Thanks as always.
All right, take care, guys.
Is Hub Arkish. Follow him on Twitter at Hub_Arkish.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.